Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This episode is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Sharealike 4.0 international license. For more information, visit creativecommons.org.
Hey, Breaking Math fans. First, I want to thank you for listening. I have an important message for everyone. You can start your own podcast right now with Anchor. Anchor lets you create and distribute your own podcast. Just get an idea, record, and upload. It's just that easy. Anyone can do it. I'm on my way to accomplishing my dream, and you can too. Just get on your device's app store and download Anchor. It contains everything you need to make a podcast. With Anchor, you can put your podcast on all the big platforms. Apple Podcast, Spotify, Google Podcast, Amazon, and more. Reach the whole world with Anchor. Best of all, Anchor is free. You have nothing to lose with a free platform. Download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
I'm Sophia.
And I'm Gabriel.
And welcome to Problem Episode 8, Tangent Tango, where we're going to be talking about Morikawa's unsolved problem.
This was solved during the COVID quarantine. It's fascinating. I love the fact that people attempted these unsolved problems and they made some progress.
Oh, yeah. There's been a weird, there's been a lot of weird academic stuff going on during COVID, and this is a pretty cool one.
Yeah.
But before we start, we have a few plugs. So if you want a poster that has a lot of cool math diagrams on it that you can put on your wall, it's a 36 by 24 inch poster. We have one, and we are selling it on facebook.com/breakingmathpodcast for $19.65, which includes the shipping and handling, which is $4.50. You can get that at facebook.com/breakingmathpodcast.
Mm-hmm. And again, that's with it's a flyover of tensor calculus, which is pretty darn cool. It's the mathematics used in Einstein's general theory of relativity. So it makes a great birthday gift.
Oh, yeah. And then we have our Patreon if you want to support us monthly. It's just $1 or more. You could have our episodes with no ads and outlines. If you want to have updates about the show, you can find us on Twitter at Breaking Math Pod or facebook.com/Breaking Math Podcast. We also have our website, breakingmathpodcast.app, which we're going to be updating pretty soon. And if you want to email us, just send us an email at breakingmathpodcast@gmail.com.
Yep, with any ideas, comments, or questions, or corrections. So without further ado, this problem comes from a type of math known as Sengoku, which has its origins in Japan. Basically, Sengoku consists of geometric arrangements, often involving geometric objects tangent to each other in artistic ways. And it was presented as gifts to Buddhist temples in Japan during the Edo period, which is basically between 1603 and 1870. Japanese math was distinct for quite a while.
For example, Seki Takakazu, who lived from 1642 to 1708, was a Japanese mathematician who invented something very much like calculus, researched Bernoulli numbers, and this is all separate from the West. One thing about Japanese math is you have these sangaku, which they would put on, like Gabriel said, tablets and presented to Buddhist temples. And one example of this kind of problem is, let's say you have two rolling pins that are resting on a table of different sizes. If you want to squeeze in another rolling pin between them in the kind of triangular space between the table and the rolling pins. The size of that circle is given by 1 over the square root of its radius is equal to the sum of the inverse square roots of the two bigger rolling pins radiuses. That's a Sangaku, for example.
And today's problem is a specific Sangaku problem proposed by a man by the name of Jihei Morikawa in 1821. Sophia, would you like to explain this problem?
All right, sure. So let's say we have a line and you have two circles of any size resting on that line. So the two circles are touching one another.
And they don't have to be the same size circle, right? One can be larger than the other.
Yeah, and the only stipulation is that the two circles are touching one another and they're touching the line.
Okay.
So right now we have a point where the two circles touch each other and two points where the circles touch the line. So 1 point for one circle and 1 point for the other circle. So it's just tangent to the line.
Very good. And I understand in this problem, we are interested in the little space between these circles and the line. It's how would you describe that shape?
It's kind of like, I think you could call that like, an inverse lunoid or something.
Hmm, interesting. Yeah, that is what we're interested in this particular problem.
Yeah. And the question is, what is the minimum size of the square that is tangent to both the line and the two circles? So I think it'd be good at this point to talk about what tangents are exactly. And it's pretty simple. It's just if two geometric shapes touch each other at exactly one point, they're tangent to each other at that point.
Correct. And in this case, if you have a square that is flat on the line, it'll be tangent all along that particular side. So it's not always only one point. It's also, you know, just a given segment.
Yeah. And this square, if you think about it, if the corners are touching the circles, for example, then it could be tangent at those two points and wherever it is on the bottom. It could also be tangent to the side. And it could be also tangent to both a corner and a side. A way to imagine this is if you have a coin rolling off of a table with a really hard edge, right before it starts rolling off the table, you could see that the corner of the table is touching the coin and the coin is resting on the table.
Yeah. And for the sake of this problem, this was mentioned earlier, but I think it's worth stating again. In the audience's mind, the audience is allowed to resize the square of any size at all. And essentially the square can be rotated into any orientation. And that's actually part of this problem as well.
So, and the question is, what is the minimum size of the square? This problem was proposed in 1821, and it wasn't solved until June of last year. It was solved by Jan E. Hawley and David Crum.
That's right, and the paper can be found. We'll put the link to the paper in the show notes, so you can go through it step by step if you'd like. And I believe it was solved with a computer, is that right?
Part of it was, yes. One of the steps involved finding Galois groups and roots and stuff. A lot of it was done, it seems, by hand. And I think it's kind of interesting, too, because it relies on this, on the algorithm used being reliable. And it's an algorithm called Magma, and I believe it has been shown to be reliable.
Very cool.
So first, what we can do to solve this problem is we might be a little bit daunted because let's say the left circle has a radius of 10 and the right circle has a radius of 7. It seems like we have quite a few different configurations that the circles can be in. But without loss of generality, we can set the smaller radius to 1 and the other one to a number greater than 1. So let's say you have a radius of like 1/2 and 3/4.
Mm-hmm.
You could resize that to 1 3/2. And without loss of generality, the larger circle is going to be on the right. And the reason we could do that is because if you just flip the problem around, it's the same problem.
Mm-hmm. Good. Next, we prove that for every angle that we want to rotate our square at, there's only one position in size that has the square at that angle that is tangent to the two circles and the line.
And the way that this was done in the paper is basically showing that if you wedge it in there, that you can't really rotate it in any way. Basically shown that it's completely wedged in there. Again, what we're going to be doing here is giving a big overview of how this is done, just so you understand, like, perhaps what a long-form proof is and the type of steps taken. And I think this is a remarkable proof because it takes so many steps. And it seems like it almost must take so many steps, especially when you have things like squares that are a little bit detailed compared to a circle, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like have the corners and all that. And so what this has the effect of doing is now the only parts of the problem that we need to consider are the angle that the square is at and the size of the circle on the right.
Mm-hmm.
And and that makes the problem already a little bit less daunting, right?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, the next step is simply enumerating the different configurations that exist. The paper uses the two points on the square touching the circle and how they are tangent to the circles that they each touch and where the tangents are. In fact, it gives a diagram of every possible orientation.
And you can imagine the ways that they are tangent. There's only three ways that that the paper uses for the way that they are tangent. There are points that are tangent to only a side. So this would be if like the circle touches the middle of one of the segments between the two corners, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's one where it's like to a side and a corner, which is like what we said earlier with the coin rolling off the table example.
Yes.
And then there's just the one where only the corner is touching the circle.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's a very, very subtle difference, but a relevant one nonetheless.
Yeah. And if my intuition is right, these authors probably tried a lot of different ways to categorize these orientations before landing on this. This is the kind of thing that you do with a big math proof, is you just kind of try different things.
Mm-hmm.
And those three categories aren't the only things that we have to consider.
Correct.
We also have to consider the height of the corners. So if they're the same height, that's a different category than if you have the right over left, even if the same types of corners are touching.
Yes.
So you can imagine that as being like the two corners touching the circles versus the square wedged at an angle where both the corners are touching the circles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I think there are three orientations that we have to consider here. As you said earlier, the orientation in which the two corners were at the same height, the orientation where the right corner is oriented above the left, and then the invert of that, where the left corner is above the right.
And if you think about it, a square is symmetric. If you rotate a square 90 degrees, you get the same square, right?
Correct.
So we only have to consider 90 degrees, or pi over 2 radians of rotation, or tau over 4. Tau has the utility of being one full rotation versus 2 pi.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you start with configuration 1, 2, and 3 is what they called it. And I suppose you could start with a few other ones, but this kind of makes it neat. And the configuration 1, 2, and 3 is where the square is sitting flat on the line below.
Mm-hmm.
But configuration 1 is where both the top corners are touching the circles. Configuration 2 is the same thing, except for the left side is touching the circle also on the edge and the corner. So it's a tangent right there at the corner. And then configuration 3 is where it just touched the left side and the upper right-hand corner. And as you rotate the square, you get all these different types of configurations. For example, if you rotate it a little bit from configuration 3 to configuration 4, you still get it touching the side, but now the left corner is below the right corner because it's rotated a little bit.
All in all, there are a total of 19 configurations if we follow these rules. And in this paper, they are ordered by angle, and they start with configuration 1, then they go to configuration 2, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, and what's interesting too is that it's kind of a graph, meaning like you go from configuration 1 to 6, 2 also goes to 6, but 3 goes to 4 and 5 before it goes to 6. The paper has this on page 4, and it's going to be in our Patreon outline as well.
Yes, yeah. And actually, I really do enjoy the challenge of having to explain something where somebody has to envision in their mind what we're talking about. Actually, that's a good exercise.
I mean, that could almost be Breaking Math's mission statement.
Yes, exactly.
So. Breaking Math, making things hard for ourselves. Here at Breaking Math, we like to learn, not just to learn necessarily. I mean, that's fun too, but we like to learn with purpose as well. And we try to do that with, I think, examples in our own podcast.
It's so empowering knowing that I can do better, feel better, be better.
So this year we continue to learn with purpose ourselves by streaming the Great Courses Plus, and I want you to join us. I mean, we got the Great Courses Plus, and there's like so much stuff that you can tap into, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, there's what, shows on cooking, there's shows on
history, yoga, there's shows on culture, anything that you can imagine.
And one course that I think y'all would like is the course on math and magic. We've talked about this before, but it's pretty cool. It demystifies magic tricks through use of applied math. I mean, it just has some cool things on there too, like a perfect shuffle and how to use perfect shuffles in sequence to do certain tricks. And a perfect shuffle is like when you shuffle exactly one card at a time. So it's kind of cool combining sleight of hand with math in that way.
Who doesn't enjoy learning about magic? And the fact that you can do it from a mathematical angle is just awesome. It's almost like a power to know how to do those tricks.
So with the Great Courses Plus, you get unlimited streaming to thousands of video courses on pretty much anything, like we said, public speaking, oceanography, body language. I mean, you name it, it has it. It's all thoroughly vetted.
And it's fact-based information you can trust from some of the best professors and top experts in their field all over the world.
And they have an app you could watch or listen on any device. It's the Great Courses Plus app. So you can learn anytime, anywhere. You know, you'll be in the car. You can listen to it. Working out. You could do two things at once, basically. Sign up at the Great Courses Plus to find out. And you want a month free? We got you a month free. Special URL is thegreatcoursesplus.com/breakingmath. And like I said, unlimited access for free for a month.
Don't miss out on this. Trust us. Again, that's thegreatcoursesplus.com/breakingmath.
So basically what you show is that there's only two valid configurations. And this was done by eliminating configurations a few at a time using some clever geometric methods. All of them are pretty much stuff that could be solved by actually Euclidean math pretty easily. So honestly, like the entire problem up to where we're going to be talking about the actual side length, a lot of it can be done by really ancient mathematics. And that's pretty cool too. That is such a recent proof with that.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is looking at this diagram, I actually thought of a way to solve this, creating a program that's sort of like a complete circuit where the light would only be on when all angles are touching. You know what I mean? And it just tried through combinatorics, every possible arrangement of that square. I don't know if that's possible or not, but I don't know. Just a thought, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, but then you run into the problem of how do you make the thing rigorous? I mean, I think that'd be definitely good for kind of like an empirical look at it, which I'm sure is what they did at some point too. Because I mean, when I've solved problems myself, a lot of times I just plug it into programs and see mm-hmm. what everything is kind of like and then go from there. But I mean, there's so many ways to a problem. I've said this on the show before, but solving a math problem can be like trying to get to the store where you end up at your friend's house first, then you end up on Mars, then you end up in a universe that goes backwards in time before you finally make it to the store.
yeah, that's true. Just looking at these diagrams, though, it looks like a rolling dice in an alley, you know, with all these.
Oh yeah, layout with the square rotating like that.
Yeah. So I just thought, you know, would there be some way to, you know, model that? Anyways, not to take away from the paper.
Oh yeah, no, and I mean, like it could have even been that this was verified by a computer, which a lot of stuff is. But I mean, it would honestly be interesting to ask them. But so configuration 6 and configuration 19 are the only ones identified as valid. And configuration 19 is only valid when the circles are the same size. So configuration 6 is where the two upper corners of the square touch the circle, and the circle is angled towards the smaller of the two circles. So it's angled to the left. Configuration 19 is the same, but the circle is angled to the right, and it only occurs when the circles are the same size. And if you think about it, they're very, very similar, configuration 6 and configuration 19. And one more important thing is that the sides are not tangent to the circles in these configurations, only the corners.
Okay. Now, the next step is to identify what size the minimum solution is. And this solution involves magma.
Magma is a computational algebra system which takes in like algebra and does fun stuff with it.
I'm sure it's an acronym. Kind of, is it an acronym, I believe?
Let me see.
We should look that up, see if it's an acronym. Nothing. It's actually called magma.
Yeah. Okay, so apparently it's not an acronym.
But still, that's an awesome name for a mathematical tool. Magma.
Oh, yeah. So the minimum side length of the inscribed square is the minimum value of a certain function that was identified. And the function is the square root of... So, I mean, yeah. So what does that mean, basically? It's basically that is the configuration of That is the configuration of the square. So we already know the configuration that the square is in, and we know that it touches two sides. So this is the formula that describes a square that touches at two corners in the way that it does. And so finding the minimum side length, you have to find the minimum value of that function. And that was done using magma. And it turns out that it's a root of a god-awful polynomial. It's a 10th degree polynomial where you define seven other polynomials. And it's F1 through F7, where it's F4 times quantity, F1 times F7 plus F2 times F6 minus 2 times F3 times F5 and quantity squared minus quantity F3 squared times F4 plus F5 squared minus F1 times F4 times F6 minus F2 times F7 and quantity squared. And then to define F1 through F7, actually, you know what? You could just find it on the paper, which again is linked in the show notes, but it's a horrible function. So now the question is there a closed form radical solution for this minimum side length?
Now they actually show the non-existence of a radical solution.
And you might think, what is a radical solution? A radical solution is just writing something down in a way that uses square roots and cubed roots and 800th roots and 24.3rd roots, just things like that. It uses rational numbers and roots and division and multiplication, addition, all that. And they prove that it doesn't exist. And you might think, why doesn't it exist? Why can't you just take the root of a polynomial? Because you might remember from school the root of a quadratic can be done using the quadratic formulas. The cubic formula actually exists too for a cubic equation, and the quartic exists. But once you get to the quintic, there is no general solution, which is shown using Galois theory, which we should do one of these days. It connects group theory and field theory, where group theory is like it shows symmetries, like, you know, if you rotate a triangle 120 degrees, you get the same triangle and you could flip it and all that. Mm-hmm. And field theory, which is like rational numbers, the field that we're concerned with here is the field of the radicals. And you could show that this polynomial does not reduce using that. But we're not going to go into that quite, because it would require an entire episode on its own. But I think it's just interesting to note that perhaps this is the reason why this wasn't found until recently, is because a lot of ancient math relies on constructible numbers in a way that doesn't involve roots.
Wow, what a way to spend a COVID quarantine.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, totally. Like, I think it's pretty cool. And again, that was solved by Jan E. Hawley and David Crum. And you can find their paper on archive.org. That's ARXIV. And the paper's reference number is 2008.00922V1 in 25th of July, 2020. And again, it'll be on the show notes.
Alrighty. That's been fun.
Yeah. And you check out our sponsor, The Great Courses Plus.
Yeah. It's actually free access for a month if you guys go through our link. And actually, that's really a great way to help this show out.
And it's pretty cool. Like, I've been using it, like, it's been pretty great. And you can do that at thegreatcoursesplus.com/breakingmath.
Yes, that's a great way to help out this show. You get a whole month for free, and there's so many topics on there, everything from cooking to yoga to history to astronomy. I mean, what a way to educate yourself and have some great ideas for conversations at your next cocktail party when COVID is over.
Yeah, you could bypass the not being able to talk to people again because of being in our isolation.
Yep. Till next time.